Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and it is Wednesday, which means it's time to talk sports with the one, the only, the man, the legend. I'll keep going, Bill. Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's
We won't have time to talk sports.
We have 16 full minutes today. Now,
excellent.
I want to tell everyone that it's a really bittersweet moment for us because, as you may have heard, after 25 years of hosting Only a Game, Bill has announced that he's officially hanging up his cleats, yes, soccer metaphor, and retiring. So, Bill, before we get to, like, the sports stuff, can we talk you out of it?
Well, standard procedure on an occasion like this would be to offer an enormous financial incentive. But this is public radio, so it's highly unlikely.
Wrong, you're in the wrong business, friend.
I've been in the wrong business for 37 years.
Well, we're going to miss you like crazy, Bill. So I just,
thank you.
Instead of talking about the week in sports, which we might get to some of that in a minute, we wanted to spend a little bit of time just talking to you about your outstanding career here. And first of all, like as you are now approaching your retirement here, what's going through your mind? You're only a couple of days away from your final OEG broadcast.
That's right. That's right. Coming up on Saturday, a review of some of the most exciting and silliest moments that we've ever perpetrated on the radio public. It's been great fun to look back at some of the stuff we've done. And in some cases, because of the sort of repurposing of some of these things to talk to, in one case, a young man basketball player that I hadn't talked to for some time and see how well he's doing these days. I knew him as a community college basketball player, and he's now a lead engineer working for Eversource. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, before we're going to do sort of a mini version right now of what listeners will hear on the weekend at Only a Game, because I want to talk to you about some of your favorite moments from Only a Game. But before we get to that, Bill, you know, at the very top of the show, when I first introduced this hour of Radio Boston, I said, you know, Bill Littlefield has hosted a show for 25 years that's really, it's officially about sports, but it's actually about life.
I hope so.
Is that a good way of describing you've done or what Only a Game has tried to do?
I think that is a fair way of describing what we've tried to do. The original intent for Only a Game was to create a program full of stories that happen to be set in sports that would be attractive and interesting to people, whether they were great sports fans or not. Because after all, the people who participate in sports, the pro athletes, the amateur athletes, the people throwing frisbees and, you know, getting mad when the dog jumps up and catches it. I mean, they're all people and they all have stories. And if you sit down and listen, you learn that they're fascinating in many cases. And my experience was often that the people I went to interview, the famous or infamous athletes, were the least interesting. I was more interested sometimes in the old coach at the end of the bench who nobody was paying any attention to because he had the best stories. And, I mean, to have had the opportunity to tell those kind of stories for all these years has been magnificent fun.
Well, let's talk about some of those because you've year in and year out talked about at Only a Game, and the whole team at Only a Game have talked about, for example, head injuries, concussions in football in particular. And you were one of the first shows to interview Chris Nowinski. Now, a lot of people might know him now because he's the co-founder of the BUCTE Center.
Right.
But you were one of the first to interview him. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had some opportunity to talk to Chris recently because last year I participated in or narrated a documentary for the BBC about head injuries in football. And of course, we went to visit Chris as part of that. And he came across the room when he saw me and threw his arms around me and said, "You were the first guy to interview me about my book." And I hadn't realized that until he told me. But I became concerned and angry about that issue long ago when I saw the first little mentions in the back section of the sports pages of families that had been embarrassed to come out and say, "Hey, you know that guy that used to be a hero on Sunday? Well, he doesn't know how to brush his teeth anymore.
Right.
And he doesn't remember the names of his children, and he needs 24-hour care. And we don't have the money. because the pension that the NFL provided and the Social Security payment don't come anywhere near taking care of this guy who everybody used to cheer for every Sunday. So you'd see those rare stories and eventually kind of put it together and say, hey, wait a minute, this is not a small number of men. Mm-hmm. This is not a small number of families being affected by this. And so we started doing some homework on it. We started talking to people about it. And I will never forget the phone call I had with a spokesperson for the NFL some years ago who called me because he was upset. The NFL was upset about what we were doing. And he said, you know, there are a lot of former NFL players who don't have CTE and brain injuries and Alzheimer's. And I said, do you know how much you sound like a spokesperson for the tobacco industry who says my 92-year-old grandfather smoked 2 packs of Camels a day and doesn't have lung cancer? And he said, yeah, well, scratch that.
Scratch
and I
that.
Said, too late. You didn't say you're off the record at the beginning of the conversation. I mean, crazy stuff like that.
I mean, did you get a lot of blowback from the NFL? Because you have been consistently critical of the league's handling.
We got some. And we got some from fans, from football fans who didn't want to be reminded or didn't want to be educated about the fact that the sport that they love was literally causing the heroes that they worshipped to live exceedingly diminished lives once they retired.
Wow. Well, let's talk about another moment that was a highlight for you as host of Only a Game, and that was your interview with Reuben Carter. And I want to play a quick clip from that conversation. But first of all, remind us about Carter's story.
Reuben was a boxer. He lived in New Jersey, and he was an excellent boxer. He was a successful boxer, not a champion, but a what they call a contender. And one night in Paterson, New Jersey, he and a fellow that he was driving around with were arrested for a triple murder in a bar. Mm-hmm. And There was a lot of problems. There were a lot of problems from the beginning. The first eyewitness identified, he said, these are what these two guys look like. And the identification did not in any way bear any relationship to Reuben Carter and the guy he was with. But it didn't matter. The police didn't like Reuben. They hauled him in, and the guy who had survived in the bar said, that's not him. So they let him go. But a couple of months later, they found a couple of guys that they could turn who would swear that Carter was in the bar at the time of these murders. And so he was arrested and eventually tried and convicted and went to jail.
For 19 years.
Served 19 years for a crime he didn't commit. Yeah. So that was Reuben's story.
Well, you did have a chance to talk to him, as I said. And so here's a clip from your conversation with Reuben Carter.
If I've learned nothing else in life, if I've learned nothing else in the time that I spent in prison, I learned that bitterness only consumes the vessel that contains it. Bitterness is like a headache. It's like a toothache. It hurts nobody but you. And if I would allow myself to be bitter for 1 second, if I allow myself, my life to be infected by that 1 second, I would be a co-conspirator to the crimes that was committed against us.
Remarkable.
It's exceptional.
Wow.
Reuben, something of a marvel. And he wasn't, I mean, Reuben was kind of a bad guy as a young man. I mean, he was a bully. He was a tough guy. His treatment of women was not particularly admirable. But he came out of prison a different man, and a man who was able to say what you just heard him say. And not only that, he devoted the rest of his life to getting guys who had been wrongfully convicted and incarcerated out of prison, and he got a lot of them out. And at the very end of his life, he wrote an op-ed for one of the New York papers in which he said, my only regret is there's this one more guy that I know he's innocent, I'm trying to get him out of jail, and I'm dying, and I'm going to die before I get him out, and that's my only regret. Unbelievable.
Wow.
And fortunately, shortly after Reuben died, that guy got out.
Well, you have talked to so many notable sports figures, superstars, even over the years. And one of them has to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So let's listen.
This
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and you can call me Kareem, please.
I was hoping you'd say you can identify me as a writer and activist who once played some basketball.
That's too long.
Oh, my God. What an amazing interview. Can you tell me, what was it like to talk to him?
Well, it was great because Kareem is one of those rare superstar athletes who's built a terrific career after retiring from sports. He had a very long and magnificently successful career as a pro basketball and college and pro basketball player, also won in high school. But then has created a second career as a writer, a social critic, an activist, magnificently articulate spokesperson for democratic values and racial justice, and just a delightful guy. I've had several opportunities to talk to him and relished each and every one.
So I'm going to actually take a complete left turn here, and there's one story that you did that I just remembered about that's actually not on this list, Bill, but because I want to say that everyone that occasionally Bill Littlefield puts his hat on as Bill Littlefield investigative reporter, because I want to remind everyone about the story that you did about the Trumps, golf, and Russian financing.
Yeah, it was funny because I wasn't even investigative reporting. I was just talking to a golf writer who happened to mention that he had gone to a Trump golf club that Trump had allegedly rehabilitated and opened, and he happened to ask one of Trump's sons, "Where did your dad get the money to do this?" Because U.S. We were in a recession, and U.S. banks were not giving people money to rehabilitate golf courses. And the son, I think it was Trump Jr., Donald Trump Jr., said, "Well, we don't have to worry about U.S. banks. We get all the money we need from Russia. They love golf. They love us. We got all the money we need." And this was, of course, years before Donald Trump decided that he should be president of the United States. And so we come back to the office, and I said, "Hey, boy, we got our lead." We put that on the air, and all of a sudden, television shows that had never heard of us before were calling and saying, "Could we have that tape, please? That's very interesting."
Didn't Donald Trump Jr. also tweet you and accuse
you of
fake news? You must wear that badge with pride.
It was the highlight of my radio career. I was too young to be on Richard Nixon's enemies list, but I made it onto the fake news list as opposed to Trump Jr. I mean, according to Trump Jr., so I was very proud of that.
Okay. Well, on that note, one would wonder what they would make of other things that you've done on Only a Game, such as, how about this annual tradition from the show, always a big hit?
These diminutive tales are told with 5 syllables and then 7 and then another 5, and they're otherwise known as Super Bowl haiku. We've been presenting them for the last 24 seasons.
Super Bowl's coming. Everyone anticipates. I don't really care.
Boston? Aerosmith. What do you got, Seattle?
We had Nirvana.
Oh, damn. Super Bowl haiku, Bill. Come on.
The WBUR Only Game haiku, hut hut haiku players are magnificent every year. That really is what has made this go. The incredible collection of hams who work here and never get on the air until we put them on with Super Bowl haiku.
And they shine every year,
absolutely,
I have to say.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I want everyone to know that I have a crack staff of fact-checkers at Radio Boston here, and they just fact-checked me on something, and it was Eric Trump who sent you that tweet.
Oh, okay, it was Eric.
Not Donald Jr. Sorry. Eric Trump who sent the tweet accusing Bill Littlefield.
Does that make it any less credible? I mean, Eric is often portrayed as the one who's slightly less credible than Donald Jr., so I don't know. We'll let the listeners decide that.
I don't know. So, you know, we haven't talked about all your coverage of the Red Sox year in and year out. But you did write a piece for the Globe magazine in 2004.
Yeah.
And back then you said you'd hope the Sox would never win the World Series. Remind us why you would say such a heresy.
Well, my point was that rooting for the Red Sox as long as they didn't win the World Series conveyed upon fans a true kind of singularity You know, teams win. Every year another team wins the World Series. Even the Mets have won the World Series. The Phillies have won the World Series. Kansas City has won the World Series. As long as Boston figured out creative ways to almost win the World Series and then fall on their faces instead, as they did so brilliantly in 1986, they were unique, or nearly unique, at least singular. And I thought that was kind of cool. You know, people could grab on to the Red Sox and then assume that all of this failure was directed personally at them. That the Red Sox were on the planet in order to infect their lives with disappointment and despair. And once the Red Sox, I said, well, you know, if they ever win the World Series, that'll be over. They'll just be another team that sometimes wins the World Series. And all the, a guy called me up after that article came out, and apparently they were tearing me apart on one of the sports call-in shows and taking it seriously. And I thought that was hilarious.
It's sports, right? What's not to take seriously, Bill? We have a couple of seconds left here. I mean, people are going to miss you on the air so very much. We here at WBUR are going to miss you. But what's next for you? Well, is there life beyond Only a Game?
I hope I'll be still doing commentaries from time to time and come in and see you. I won't see you because you won't be here for Radio Boston. You're moving on. Yeah, and that's very exciting.
I was trying to avoid talking about that. Thank you. We'll discuss that on a later day.
Congratulations anyway.
This is about you
terrific.
Right now, Bill.
Couldn't have happened to a nicer, more deserving person.
Well, you know what? Bill Littlefield, it has been such a pleasure week in and week out listening to you on Only a Game, talking to you here on Radio Boston. My best wishes
for you
and your next step.
Thank you very much.
Bill Littlefield is the legendary host of Only a Game. You will hear him this Saturday on WBUR at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Do take a listen. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Oh,